Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, the podcast where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insight on the future, leadership, and career development. Our goal is to inspire you and empower you to live an unlimited and smart future by breaking free from limiting beliefs, firefighting, and the invisible walls of our society. I'm your host, Cindy Mangeni, Future of Work expert, diversity accelerator, executive coach, and international speaker. Welcome to Glassbreakers Cafe, the podcast where we meet with impactful leaders to get their wisdom and insights on the future, inclusive leadership, and career development. Our special guest today is Ronald Brisé, Government Affairs Practice Leaders at Gunster. Thank you, Ronald, for stopping by our cafe today.
Thank you, Cindy. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
And to get to know you better, Ronald, please, could you share what is your role, your responsibilities as Government Affairs Practice Leaders at Gunster?
Sure. So let me give you a little background about Gunster first, and then we'll go into the practice itself. Gunster is a law firm in the state of Florida. It's been around for almost 100 years and an evolution of the firm. I'll give you a little bit of history. The firm started as a Palm Beach firm on the island and represented a lot of the clients there. And then as those clients' interests grew, for a long time, the firm grew along with the interests of the clients. And so we are a business firm. So we represent primarily business clients. And we also have a private wealth practice as well within the firm. So as part of that work, we also engage in government affairs. And so businesses have interest in what's happening within the government. Because those of us who are in government say, if you are not at the table, then chances are you are on the menu. And so our job within my practice is to ensure that the interests of our clients are well represented within governmental processes or are part of the policy discussion as it occurs within the state of Florida. So my job specifically is to oversee or manage the government affairs practice. And it's interesting, I'm a non-lawyer that's practicing within a law firm. So that's an interesting privilege to have. So we have our team is made up of lobbyists who are, some are lawyers and some are non-lawyers. And then we also have regulatory attorneys who specialize in administrative law, and they engage and represent our clients before regulatory agencies or executive agencies here within the state of Florida. And then our lobbyists represent clients before legislative bodies, whether they are state legislative bodies or local legislative bodies, meaning city councils, city commissioners, county commissions, and all other sorts of bodies that are similarly situated where decisions are made. So what I'm responsible for is, you know, ensuring from a management perspective that our budgets are in place, are ensuring that we recruit the right people. And I support our team to ensure that they have the resources necessary for them to do the work on behalf of our clients. So that is in essence what I do from day to day. I also represent clients, and we are as a firm, a Florida-centric firm. In other words, we focus on Florida and we generally don't do work outside of the state, except if a client or one of our current clients is doing, has interests outside of the state, we may support them in some of that work, but we generally are Florida-wide and Florida-wise.
Good. Thank you for the overview and a rich history for the company. And also, you have like an atypical position being a non-lawyer in a lawyer firm. Right. But to be where you are today, you are also an atypical journey because you are a teacher, you worked for a telecom company, you served in the Florida state legislature. And for your generation, which is the same generation as mine, Generation X, it was not so common to have such a diverse career. Nowadays, a new generation, this will be like the new normal. You have multiple careers. So what helped you? Because change is not easy. So what leadership muscles help you to navigate and thrive in such diverse fields like education, politics, and the private sector?
Sure, very good question. And you're absolutely right. Our generation typically would have two jobs and generally within the same career. So they would start with a company, do about 15 years or so, 10 years or so, and then transition to another company, generally because they reached a ceiling, and then the folks who were right before them were either not retiring or so forth. So then they sought other opportunities elsewhere. And as you mentioned, my journey is a little bit different. And so I have always been an inquisitive person and willing to take certain risks. And so when I started my career as a teacher years ago, I taught in the classroom. I also did marketing at some point for the school. It was a private school that I worked for. And then that led me to also add to my education. And once I did that, it opened up some other opportunities. And so in so doing, that created the opportunity for me to join a telecom company as its vice president and chief operating officer. And within that space, it was a very interesting and very active time in the telecom world as it was transitioning from what was the Ma Bell system into a completely deregulated system, and with new technologies such as voice over IP and the transition within the phone card industry and all of that. So my company, the company I worked with, was sort of in the middle of that space, right? Voice over IP and phone calling cards and even digital movie space and all of that. So we were engaged in all of those type of activities. And as part of that process, you know, I always had an interest in public policy, even growing up. And so there was an opportunity for me to pursue that pathway. And while I was continuing to do my professional work, I engaged in the, I had sort of dipped my toe into the political arena. And then I ran for office and I lost the first time. But then I got appointed to the City of North Miami Planning Commission. And for those who may not know what planning commissions do, they are the ones who decide the heights of the buildings, which buildings will be where, what type of buildings will be allowed, what types of businesses will be allowed within your particular city. And based upon the decision of the Planning Commission, those decisions are ratified or denied by the full city council or city commission. And so after doing that for, I think I did it for 2 or 3 years. And so that is a completely volunteer role that one has. I decided to run for public office again. And this time I won. And so therefore I joined the Florida House of Representatives representing the 108th district in South Florida, Miami to be exact, North Miami, Miami Shores, that general area. And so I was doing that and then had my day job, because in Florida, the legislature is a citizenry legislature, which means that it's not a full-time position. Mm-hmm. It's something that you do as a citizen to support the interests of your community within the state. And so I did that. And then there was an opportunity to join the Florida Public Service Commission. And so I got appointed by the governor, then Governor Crist, to serve on the Public Service Commission. And then I got reappointed by Governor Scott to serve a subsequent term on the commission as well. So that then put me in the role. I went from a policymaker as a state legislator to a regulator and implementer of policy. So as a regulator, the commission oversaw all of the utilities within the state of Florida, water, electricity, natural gas that goes to the home, and telecom. And so all of those things are overseen by the commission, which is comprised of five individuals. And so, and then you have a full staff that, you know, attorneys, accountants, and engineers who build up the cases, and ultimately the commissioners make the decisions that impact every person in the state of Florida. Because the reality is that if you don't have electricity, water, or gas, or communication services, the economy, livelihood, healthcare, all of those things stop functioning the way we understand them. And so I from my perspective, it is curiosity, mm-hmm. Ability and willingness to take calculated risks. And so curiosity and learning are two different things. So willingness to apply yourself and learn, and then competence, learning your craft and becoming competent in your craft are the things to me that have allowed me to navigate these different paths. And really, being true to oneself and saying, okay, I've done this for enough time. It's time to do something different, and not being afraid or glued to what you know, and being willing to take a step out into the unknown.
Yes, and I love the story. And in your previous role, I imagine your experience in telecom was really helpful also. And now your experience being a policemaker and regulator, it's also super helpful in what you are doing. So it's amazing how there is like a connection of dots that maybe when you started, at some point, we don't know when everything yeah. is going to converge.
Very true. Very true.
And also, not only your career is diverse and rich, but also as a leader, you're a multicultural leader. You speak three languages. You were born in Haiti from Asian parents, but grew up 6 years in Latin America, arrived in the US at the age of 7 years old. And I believe did you speak English or you didn't speak
No,
English?
I did not speak English.
You didn't speak English when you arrived. And now this amazing career, when you broke a lot of glass ceilings, because I imagine that a lot of time you were the only one or one of the few who looked like you in super powerful rooms. From one of my previous guests, I've learned that when President Obama was in office and was visiting Florida, it was not unusual for his office to call you and get your input on the agenda. So how did you pave your way, build the right mindset to take your space, to make your voice heard in those powerful rooms? Because not everybody is able to do it. So what is a secret?
I don't know that if there is a secret. I think there's a couple of things that make those things happen. I think some of it is, my dad always says that luck is essentially a combination of of opportunity and preparation, right? So those two things converge. And if you, then you are able to sort of stand in the moment. And so from my perspective, one, it goes back to competence, right? Being competent and being willing to extend yourself as necessary. So being in those rooms, right? And you are correct. Very often I am in rooms that I am the only person that looks like me in the room, and at many levels, right? So there's a few things that I say to anyone that's gonna be in one of those rooms. One, you need to not think that you are an exception, right? But you have earned your spot in the room. And so therefore you need to behave as if you are aware that you've earned your spot in the room, right? So no one gave that spot to you. You've earned it. So you walk within your competence. You serve with empathy and humility. Mm. And you listen carefully for the things that are said and the things that are not being said, right? And then you advocate for the things that you are there to advocate for, per if you have a job title and there's things that you're supposed to, you know, advocate for. And then you advocate for the things that are important to you and the things that will open the door for others. And I think if you do that effectively, then you can begin to serve that role efficiently and effectively. There's a couple of things that I learned when I was a teacher is that, you know, students learn differently because, you know, we all are made up of different intelligences at different levels. So I may be a kinesthetic learner and, you know, someone is an auditory learner. And so my level of auditory learning may be lower than someone else's, but my kinesthetic learning is higher than someone else's. And so therefore, understanding those dynamics and being able to appreciate them allows us to perform well in those settings. And so therefore, I think that is an awesome opportunity as it is an awesome responsibility as well. So even though I say you have to own the space, right, because you're there, yes, but there's others who don't think that you should be there. Mm-hmm. So that goes back to the competence and being effective also opens the door for others.
Yes. And I love the part of opening doors for others, because at this moment, it's true, like those powerful rooms are not so diverse, but now we have enough data, even if we should not need data because it was like common sense that everybody should have opportunities. But in a data-driven world, we have data that support that diversity is really critical if we want to create a better world. But at this moment, minorities who are not born with a silver spoon still don't have access, a big access to those powerful rooms. So I know like you are also involved in the diversity trend, and this is also part of my business practice to close the diversity leadership gap faster. So how are you doing and contributing to open the door? So in the next generation, we will have more Ronald Brise, and he's not going to be one of the few or the only one in the room.
Sure, great question. And I think that is a trend that I've had throughout my whole career, right? Even as a teacher, and I say even as a teacher, I was a science teacher. Mm-hmm. And so as a science teacher, there's a couple of things that I tried to sort of transmit to my students that went beyond the subject matter. A couple of things. You read because reading is important. Mm-hmm. And it opens opportunities for you that though you may not be able to travel to that space or participate in that particular thing, you could essentially be there by reading it. Mm-hmm. And so you could experience it. And so reading and writing are essential, and developing those skills is extremely important to your professional development, right? And so those are skills that no matter, you know, who you are skills that we need to have. But as minorities, it is extremely important that those are things that we do, and we have to do them well. So when I joined the legislature, I was part of the Black Caucus. And at one point I was vice chair of the Black Caucus. And one of the things that we used to do as part of the Black Caucus, we used to call in the leaders of agencies and have them walk us through their diversity spend, have them walk us through their hiring practices, their outreach plans, and et cetera. So, you know, there were certain things that were not commonplace 20 years ago, 15 years ago, where the communication in different languages was an afterthought. Nowadays, it's something that is normal. Like, you go to certain places and governments understand that, look, if you have a certain percentage of people that speak a different language, you need to communicate with them in that way. Well, that wasn't always the case. And so there were some of us who were in the legislative process who said, okay, we need to make sure that happens. So we are going to hold you accountable as heads of agencies that happens. We want to make sure that you hire people that not only can speak the language, but have an understanding of the culture, so that the message that is coming across is reflective of all of that. So the same is true when I joined the Public Service Commission. One of the things that I always used to say when I was a commissioner and then eventually chair, look, I want to see that your teams that come before us reflect the communities that you serve. And so therefore, if you have five attorneys that are going to come before us, I want to see that within those attorneys that come before us, that you have people that look like the people who you serve. And that way you'll have different perspectives, different backgrounds that are coming to the fore. And so therefore your presentations will be richer as a result of the fact that you have a mixture of experience, backgrounds, and understandings and approaches as well. So currently, you know, within our practice, we live by those things. And then I also serve on the National Utility Diversity Council, and it is a council that is dedicated to ensuring that the idea of diversity and inclusion in every facet is promoted within the utility space. I serve on the Central Florida Urban League, which in essence supports the idea of workforce development, education, and information for people of diverse backgrounds within the Central Florida area. And then I serve on the board of the Children's Home Society, which is very interested in the foster care system and ensuring that people who are in that system are treated fairly and appropriately, and that those who are providing services to them reflect those who are receiving the services, and that we can do as much as possible to be competent culturally, so that we are not mistreating children while we thinking we are doing them a good service, we are actually doing them a disservice. So those are some of the things that I do and I'm involved in that promote diversity, that promote inclusion. But at the end of the day, I think we all as individuals have a responsibility to do it at the personal level, right? Engage with people who think differently from us, engage with people who look different from us, people who come from different places, And we have all have to be tolerant of different views, different approaches. Otherwise, the world doesn't get any better.
Yeah, and I love the fact, and we can see it in all your trajectory, the intentionality. Because if there is no intentionality, there will be no change. And we really need to take on us to really like give this step. So, and I don't know how you do to be part of so many organizations, but this is what is leadership. At the end, yes, we need to take a role if you have the opportunity to have impact. And also the podcast is about leadership, career development, and the future.
Sure.
And throughout your different venture, you had the opportunity to study disruptive technologies. And at this moment, there is like so many disruptive technologies. Everything is going so fast that it seems that sometimes the government might be like being a bit left behind. So with your government background, what technology do you see the government could leverage and to be more effective?
Sure. I mean, there are many things that the government can leverage to be more effective. You take, for instance, and so I'll go to maybe two or three. There's a great interest in climate change, right? And transitioning from fossil fuels to cleaner fuels and et cetera. And one of the things that sort of the last piece that's necessary is storage. Right. Mm. So we consider you could have solar panels and all of that. But if you don't have storage, then you've lost all of that power. And so, you know, there is a lot of work by the national labs, at least in the U.S., to figure out how to make that equation work, how to have more solar batteries available at the local level so that you can have more distributive energy across the grid. And you add the advent and the greater proliferation of electric vehicles, that adds a lot more pressure to the grid itself. So there has to be a much greater investment in battery storage and those type of things just to keep up with the demand that currently exists within that space. So that's one area, and I'm going to loop in blockchain as an area of great interest that also ties into energy, as it does to healthcare, as it does to education, and all of those type of things. So I had the opportunity to chair the blockchain task force for the state of Florida a few years ago. And we produced a report, and in that report, we said that the low-hanging fruit for blockchain implementation by state governments, or at least the state of Florida, is in IDs, right? And in terms of people being able to own their ID, what information is readily available with their ID. And some of that information could be used through the blockchain so that there could be greater efficiencies in getting services. For example, if a person has to qualify for SNAP benefits, which is like food stamp benefits, or they have to qualify for certain state programs and they have to show income verification and so forth. Well, with a blockchain, one can readily do that. One can make that information. The government servers could be connected. You tap in that information, retrieve it. It's up to date. Decision is made. All of that data doesn't have to remain there. It's essentially released, and everyone moves along their way.
This is awesome.
And it's a lot more efficient than the system the way we have it now. The same would be true for transcripts. The same could be true for medical records. So those are areas where the state could certainly invest and lead the way in engaging in those type of things. And the same is true for energy. For instance, there's a lot of programs where people who live in apartments or who cannot afford or choose not to put like solar panels on their mm-hmm. homes, but they can purchase power from clean sources. And so therefore, with blockchain, you could sort of follow the electrons and know exactly how many, how much, how many electrons, quote unquote, or how many kilowatts should be assigned to this person from this particular plant and charge them effectively. And then as you can net meter that, you can actually say, okay, you've purchased X amount of kilowatts from a clean source. So now you counterbalance that. So therefore you net meter the amount on your bill and you can reduce the amount that you're paying for electricity or other types of services. So there's a lot of things that the government can leverage, but it has to be willing to be a leader in those spaces in order for those things to happen.
Yes, and I believe at some point the government will step up and the way we're going to live in 10 or 20 years will be like so different of today. So we need like to be ready for many more disruptions. Absolutely. Ronald, we're coming to an end to our time together. Time is flying. And for the last question, I like to be a bit like more personal with the guests.
Sure.
So my question for you, you have already accomplished many great things in your career, and I believe there is much more to do. But if you could have a superpower, which superpower will you take?
Other than being able to fly on demand, I would love to have the superpower of being able to hear what people are thinking.
Mm.
Now, sometimes it would be painful, right? Because people don't always share what they're actually thinking with you. They don't verbalize their full thoughts. But I think being able to hear what people are thinking would give me an opportunity to serve people better and understand their perspectives a little bit better. It would be very interesting to have that superpower, but it would be extremely fun to be able to fly. On my own accord, wherever I want to, however I want to at any time.
Especially with traffic getting worse and worse.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And I love like the fact of looking like to know what people are thinking, but it's to serve. And this is like something we could see like throughout your journey, right? Because being a teacher is being a servant and being in public service. So we could see like this common thread, like a strong value that you have. So thank you very much, Ronald, for your time, for sharing your wisdom, your nuggets on your amazing journey. And thanks for stopping by today with us and at the Glassbreakers Cafe. And to our audience, thanks a lot. I hope you took a lot of notes and we are waiting for you for another encounter at Glassbreakers Cafe. If you enjoyed today's episode of Glassbreakers Cafe, please subscribe and share with your friends on social media. Also, be sure to follow me, your host, Cindy Mongeny, on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. If there is any special guest or special topic you would like us to address, please drop me a note at cindy@newskiesnation.com. Thanks a lot for joining us today, and remember, no one can predict the future, but we still need to prepare for it. See you next week.